For October the 21st, 2022, we talk about Scorn, Outer Wilds, Echoes of the Eye, Slay the Spire, Downfall, and much more. Welcome to Level 433. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, David.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Yeah. Now, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, gearing up for the winter. I'm trying to buy a space heater. So that is my adult adventure
of the
period. Because, you know, I don't like the cold.
Yeah. I take it there's no heating in Alabama then?
No. It's more just like I want to try to just heat like the one room I'm in instead of the whole house. And then also in particular heat my bathroom, because with strangely dyed hair, I have to have to wash my hair in cold water.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I mean, also, like, I don't know if you have gas or electric heating, but gas is probably going to be really expensive.
Yeah, too, yeah, so exactly.
Heating just the one room might be economical.
Yep.
Yeah.
So other than that, just random thing. One of my friends from, who's Indonesian, lives here, but Indonesian, his brother went back to visit family, and he asked him to bring me back a Chris. And so I put some pictures in the Slack. It brought back a beautiful, beautiful Chris.
Oh, wow.
Left-handed dagger?
Yep.
Nice. Yeah, no, that's really cool. Is that just a costume element, or could that? I mean, I imagine you could stab somebody with it.
You can stab people with murder a man with that.
Yeah.
So it's very complicated.
Okay.
Because, like,
technically illegal to murder, but
well, no. So it is a real Chris, and Chris's my understanding is you know, exist in a weird place in Indonesian culture, in that the practicality isn't always super important.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of, my understanding, a lot of traditional, like, ritual use and, you know, magical use and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so it might not be that good of an idea to actually use it as a weapon.
But as a beautiful, you know, object. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So awesome. I guess what I'm saying is, like, it is a real Chris. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a good weapon, if right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, in particular, Indonesia is very steel poor, and okay. Never developed particularly good, well, until modern times, didn't develop particularly good metallurgical techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And so the blades are kind of a very basic pattern welding, mm-hmm. and so they're very brittle.
Yeah.
So there's some stories of people of a strategy just be to, like, stab someone and snap the blade off.
Oh, that would do it.
Oh, hey.
Well, and also because tetanus shots haven't been invented yet at that point.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that'll get you.
So it's one of those things where, like, that's what I mean when I say it's complicated.
but could you personally kill someone with it? Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Two people?
So, but
gets tougher.
But yeah, there's all these different legends of you know, how you're supposed to, you know, you can tell if it's good or bad luck for a given person, you know, given Chris, and, you know, supposedly if there's someone you have a grudge against, you can, like, stab the Chris into their one of their footprints and it will kill them. Like, there's all these legends.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's always hard to tell how much of this is, like, actual Indonesian legends versus something some Westerner was like, dude, this will sell books.
This would be cool. Yeah.
For the listeners, the blade looks like a sine wave that gets smaller over time.
Yeah.
I believe it's supposed to, if I remember correctly, it's supposed to be like symbolic of a naga, so like a snake person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll never forget, I had a deck of those, like, you know, mind bender puzzle cards, like everything's a little logic trick question. Mm-hmm. And one was, you know, had a picture of this pirate with a curvy sword, you know, that's not a Chris, but, you know, similar kind of look. And it tells a very short little story about, you know, Captain Wigglybeard jumped aboard the ship and pulled out his signature curved sword. What's wrong with this story? And it was that, you know, you couldn't pull a curved sword like that, or a squiggly sword out of a squiggly hilt.
Right. Yeah, because it would
make sense. Or a scabbard. So
yes.
But it looks like the Chris Nice scabbard is wide enough to accommodate for that sign.
Yeah.
Undulation.
Hmm.
Yep.
That'd be sweet though if it was like a puzzle to take the blade out.
You, sir, are describing the sword used by the half vampire hunter Blade.
you throw a Rubik's cube between two people and say whoever walks out with this in hand wins.
Nice. Well, congratulations on your cool knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. The exciting news of the week is I started a board game group in Seattle. I'm in two different Discord servers that are like Seattle focused, or it's just like people who like meet up occasionally in a park or something like that for just to like hang out and meet people in Seattle, try and overcome the Seattle freeze and whatnot. But basically it's a bunch of internet nerds. So I organized a board game night and it turned out really well. We had, I think, 5 or 6 people total. And we just played kind of more casual games the first week since we were just kind of getting to know one another. But yeah, we're going to do it again next week and then have it be a bi-weekly thing. So I was very happy about it.
What define casual game? Like what are some examples in your mind?
It's a game called Suro, Exploding Kittens, Love Letter. There's like 1 or 2 others.
Love Letter's dope.
Yeah. But it's like games that you can play in like maybe a half an hour or less and easy to learn, that sort of thing. Not too crunchy, that sort of thing.
And Cole, could you drop a marker for Ben's inevitable rise to cult leader?
Yeah, we'll make a note of that here. Episode number 433. Okay. Got a
new button this week, huh? Cult origin story.
You know, got to pass the time somehow. Mm-hmm. Neat. Well, I wish the group well, and that I wish it no particular harm.
just general harm.
Yeah. Maybe to it.
That's a Simpsons joke. How about you, Dennis? What's going on?
I'm good. I am +1 nephew as of yesterday.
Ooh.
So that's very exciting. My younger brother, but the oldest besides me, just had his first kid.
Okay.
So we're going to go over and see it on Friday. So if you're listening to this episode, I'm probably visiting with baby Jack.
Aww.
And the most adorable thing, though, is Barrett, my just under 2-year-old, has absolutely caught baby fever.
Oh, okay. Like
he is all about it. My brother sent me some pictures of baby Jack, and Barrett's just constantly demanding to look at them on my phone. He got to FaceTime a little bit and was just ecstatic the entire time. My brother texted me. He says, "We brought Barrett's baby home today. So if you want to come over and visit, you're welcome to see him." So it's exciting times. And watching my younger brother having all the holy shit, realizations that accompany, actually starting parenthood, is kind of fun. It's kind of a cool time. I had one brother who was out of town, moved back into town. He's got a bunch of kids that are right around my kid's age. This other brother obviously has just started having kids and, just feels like a renaissance for, the Furia family siblings here.
Nice.
I don't know if you went through this with Chris, or Ben, you know, you and Joe, like just like a period of time in young adulthood, I guess, where I just you know, didn't interact with my siblings very much. Like they were in college or off doing other things. We're all kind of scattered to the winds. And it feels like we're solidifying a little bit again.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely went through that phase as well. It's like high school and college don't talk to one another. After everyone graduates from college, it's like, oh yeah, we get we have a shared perspective. We can get along with one another.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never had that.
Well, you never had any siblings.
Oh, yeah. So it's his fault, huh?
No. By the time I went to college, Chris and I had sorted out all of our beefs. So, like, I, whether I was in Cincinnati or when I'm up here, I usually don't go more than like 2 days without talking to him on the phone at least. So, kind of always been a little close like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, nothing helps a relationship like not living under the same roof anymore.
Yes. Yeah.
How's Jen feel about that?
Yeah, I didn't think that one all the way through before I said it.
Yeah. No. Okay.
She's traveling this week, and I have never felt more in love with her.
Oh, you know what they say about absence. Nice.
That's right.
Absence gets you drunk.
No.
Not even in the ballpark.
I got it, David.
Absinthe. Yeah, there we go. I got
you. Like a reverse lisp there.
Nice. Well, congratulations to your family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's me.
Yeah, I don't have too much going on. Just a bunch of getting the house ready for fall and winter. You know, my usual whole thing. Yeah. No, since the past couple of weeks have been like a movie recommendation thing, gonna let people know the Blu-ray version of American Movie is coming out. I believe it either just recently came out or came out later, or came out earlier, rather. The opposite of what I just said.
That is something I completely missed, that just reading the reviews in the history of that is just, I don't know, crazy.
I mean, it is an incredibly good documentary, and I actually just ordered my copy of it because this past weekend, kind of the second main guy, Mike Shank, the big goofy guy, he passed away tragically, and so there was a lot of love pouring out for Mike Shank on the internet, and brought up all that good memories of a very good documentary. So. Getting the Blu-ray version, we just recently covered it on Unfilmable, but I'll probably put it in the Blu-rays just to see the special features and whatnot.
So did you ever watch the movie that was it Coven that they're making in the movie?
Coven. Yeah, it's pronounced Coven. I literally we did it for Unfilmable. We did American Movie plus Coven. Coven is not very good. It's not good at all. that's all I can say about it.
That's fine.
Yeah. No. So that's what I got. Nothing too huge. I do have a game though. I do have a new game to talk about. So
I know you shut your mouth right now. This is not the segment for that.
I know. I was segueing. Come on. Just trust me. We're in good hands here.
All right. But you're on thin ice, mister.
Okay. All right. Usually I'm the one who has to. Went down on you guys.
Dennis has found a new sense of confidence in this opening act.
I know.
Look, man, I'm good at hypocrisy.
But we've got to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the young boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind. David, since you were away, I will go to you first. What you been playing?
So I've been continuing on with Deathloop. I think zeroing in on the kind of the final thing. So I'm working through Wenji's. Just completed Wenji's. I kind of plot line to learn how to lure her to her death, and then Juliana. I'm just finishing up kind of her plot line.
Okay. Yeah, I guess then, without spoiling anything, is she one of the ones that has to die?
As far as I can see, yes.
Okay.
I mean, as I cannot say much without spoiling things, but yeah, as far as I can see, everyone has to die.
Yes.
I haven't gotten to that point yet, but it's a funny idea that like the game is fairly open. You can find a way to like off her first in the morning, and then, you know, she's just not in your ear for the rest of the run.
That's funny.
So really got my hands tied here because I have the information that I could provide, but I can't.
Right, exactly.
I'm just gonna wax poetic about this game that I haven't finished and drive you all nuts.
Right. I'm interested to see because there are still a good number of loose ends with the plot. So I'm really interested to see where things are going with some of that. Trying to think. I've unlocked pretty much everything as far as I can tell. The game gets much, much easier once you get your selection of the guns you like and things like that.
And you're doing the special like armory quest too to get the really special guns, right?
Right, exactly. Although I'm not using many of them.
Okay.
The one I use the most is the silenced pistol because you can just go around and like stealth headshot everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I got the special sniper rifle, but the regular hunting rifle can roll with exploding bullets, which is just better than anything I've seen with the stealth sniper rifle because the other sniper rifle, because it's much more accurate, but you don't have to be that accurate when your special ability is blows things up.
It's basically like a rocket launcher at that point.
Right.
So your weapons are either really quiet or really loud.
Yeah. And then the one special weapon I use is the dual pistols that becomes a submachine gun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I do like the laser is pretty cool. It just has very little ammo if you don't babysit it.
Mm-hmm.
So
what?
It's continuing to be good. I'm trying to think. Yeah, right now I'm just going through and just screwing around and stuff like that. I still need to figure out how to get into the spy nests.
Yeah, that'll be a difficult one. That's a task.
Yeah,
yeah.
Still need to figure out. There's a dude who is super pissed off at you.
Yes.
Just some some stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. But yeah. Yeah, that's been a lot of fun. Sorry, I'm to the point where there's very little I can say that wouldn't be a massive spoiler.
Yeah. Well, my question would be, like, which slab powers do you find yourself gravitating towards? Because they're different for most people that I talk to, you know?
Yeah, so I pretty much always have the teleport power.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have a hard time seeing how you couldn't use that. And other than that, I don't use any of them too crazy much. The one I want to use a lot is the invisibility.
Okay.
But it just doesn't seem to work that well.
Hmm.
Because, you're technically doing like predator style invisibility. So if enemies are nearby, they'll still see you.
They'll see the warp. They'll know something's up. Yeah.
And the main thing I want to use it for is it's one. Probably my biggest frustration with the game is if two people are talking, you have to be really close to get the subtitles.
And those can be very valuable pieces of information. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the problem is you have to be close enough that they'll often notice you even if you're invisible.
Right.
So that's probably my that's my only complaint with the game, and that's that. Other than that, I just got the drunkenness power that causes enemies to attack each other, but it doesn't seem to work that well.
Dude, which one? I'm sorry.
There's the power that makes enemies drunk.
Oh, weird. That, you know, I think that was added in a patch, maybe? The fume?
Yeah. So that was Frank's power. Oh, and the way they explain it, the fact that he didn't have it, you know, when it first is in, is he just chucked his slab in the garbage.
Yeah.
So okay. You have to actually go down to the garbage to get it.
Huh.
That's so but, Frank.
But yeah, it's very much its default ability is just like it confuses enemies and they'll kind of wander around and stuff.
Hmm.
But then you can get an ability that will make them hostile to others. It just doesn't seem like they're aggressive enough with going after other people and finding targets.
Yeah.
So if you use Carnokinesis is fun, at least situationally.
The hyper power one, the like super
charge? the ability to throw people.
Oh, okay. No.
And then probably the one I use the most is the like Nexus, the linked fate.
That one I came to rely on that quite a bit, unless I was doing something extremely specific. Nexus and shift, the teleport were my go-tos.
Yeah.
There's so many situations where like killing one person is trivial. It's killing multiple people that makes things really difficult and unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
And so just removing that completely eases areas of the game.
There are very creative ways to use that. Like that, mm-hmm. that was one that kind of made it more into a bit of a playground for me.
Yeah. I do kind of wish they would let you just equip all of them, because a lot of them I would never actually use, but are really cool for certain situations.
Yeah.
So like the telekinesis ability, Carnokinesis, most of the time is useful. It's very viable, but it's not that useful.
Mm-hmm.
But situations where someone's like standing near a ledge, it's like, I kind of just want to chuck this person off. It's like if this was Dishonored, I would just switch over to that ability and do it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm gonna have to see. You get a bunch of weird variants on all of them. You know, there's like a shift ability or a switch places version of the teleport, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sure there's just weird stuff you can do with that to like break the game and things like that.
Yeah, you can do you can switch places from a jump in midair, stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's a good system.
Yeah, it is really well done. I'm really enjoying it.
Nice.
Other than that, Dennis suckered me into reinstalling Deep Rock Galactic.
Ooh, okay.
Yes.
So I am back to the dwarf mines.
Mining for dwarves?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Where did you think dwarves come from?
Dwar? Like it's a dwarf ore, DWRE. That's nothing.
I'll allow it.
You shouldn't.
What class are you playing as?
The Scout. This is my biggest problem with the game, and I feel like is a fundamental design flaw, is the classes can basically be split into two groups. The Scout that gets a grappling hook and everyone else that doesn't.
Yeah, you mentioned this before.
I'm not going to lie. I felt a little bit jelly watching him zip around.
It is cool, but I mean, I think everyone can be really conditionally good. I think Driller, for example, can be really OP, being able to just make a path wherever he wants to in certain times.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, the Driller is definitely the biggest. Well, the Driller is the biggest just like F this game's rules, unless you're abusing the engineer to just like, oh, there's a horde coming. I'll literally just encase myself. But they're all very good. I last played during early access, so I hadn't seen any of the seasonal stuff they have. So they've now got a battle pass, although it is completely free, which is awesome.
Which is funny. I was talking with another friend that plays, and he's like, "Yeah, I want to figure out how to give this game money, but I'm not sure." Like, I got it on Game Pass, and I would buy the Battle Pass if I could buy it, but it just gave it to me. So,
I think there is DLC for like cosmetics, but yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Which the visual style of this game is such, like, it's got kind of a low poly look to it. And it's well art directed, like it is a good design, but it also just makes it so that, I don't know, that I have not yet seen a skin that feels like it stands out in any way, shape, or form.
See, for me, my like go-to thing I've been messing around with is I'm trying to see like how ridiculously heavy armored I can get my dwarf and how massive of a beard I can get on him.
Yeah, that's I'm not even going to say min-maxing. It's max-maxing the beard.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Is the right way to play.
And salt and pepper gray is the ideal hair color.
All right. I unlocked one. So my main is the driller, and I unlocked one skin for it. There was like one armor that was available in the shop. And I was like, oh, that looks cool. I'll buy it. But it's glitched. So that in the end of mission animation, like all the dwarves walk forward towards the screen, but my dwarf's armor starts in front of him and he like clips through it into place. So when it starts, it's just an empty suit of armor walking towards him. He kind of morphs into it.
Scooby-Doo villain.
Yeah, it was even better purchase than I knew.
Yeah, I love that to me, just the energy of the, I'm sure this isn't what they're going for, but the energy of the victory scene is straight up like fashion show catwalk.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And you can set kind of how you pose and stuff. So it is there.
Yeah. I like that they've added a whole bunch of optional objectives. And the main one I've seen so far that's really cool is, you have to basically set out a series of kind of radio antennas to, you know, route, you know, energy or something. I forget, you know, to the objective, but you know, these are very 3D levels. So you have to figure out like, how are we going to get this, you know, up over this, you know, hill and then through this cave and stuff like that.
It feels like you're actually doing some engineering as the engineer.
Right, exactly. There's also, I know, a actual objective that's kind of a similar idea, but you're laying down pipeline, and then you then have a horde mode where you have to defend the pipeline while you're pumping up out oil. But just because it's a video game, you can also then grind on the pipes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's how you get around quickly? It's like a putting it on rails?
Yep, exactly.
Nice.
So yeah, it's a good game. Their kind of their theme, or their, I don't know, in-game seasonal story is that there's a rival mining company that's come to the system, and so you're trying to sabotage them. So I'm really hoping, My prediction is it's going to be elves, because there's several mentions in like item texts and stuff that elves exist and apparently are the nemesis of the dwarves. So my prediction is that it's elves.
Yeah, that would make sense. Although, what are elves doing mining?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They don't really seem to be good miners.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't see them getting their hands dirty.
They can probably raise magical constructs to do the dirty work for them, right?
Ooh, yes.
Just throwing it out there.
The expansion writes itself.
All of this.
They do have robots.
All of this is made up, so we can.
Although now that I think of it, when you go solo, you get a robot.
Yeah. Huh. Yes.
Yeah, because it wouldn't be safe to have an unaccompanied minor.
Oh man, that's a wow, dude. I'll allow it. I shouldn't, but I'll allow it.
No, I actually stole that joke from Kingdom of Loathing.
Okay, yeah. Oh, it always comes back to Riff, doesn't it?
You know.
Nice.
Yep, that's really all I've gotten. I installed Citizen Sleeper, but I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet.
Gotcha.
In for a treat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not bad. At least. Let's see. Since you shared one with David, Dennis, let's go to you next.
Yeah. So you kind of got my thoughts on Deep Rock Galactic there. I have two new games. Well, an expansion for a game and a new game that I've been playing. The expansion is the Downfall mod for Slay the Spire.
This is fan-made mod, right?
Wait, so yeah, is that like you start at the top of the spire and fall down?
Yes, so it introduces 8 new classes to the game, and all of them are bosses or notable enemies from the game.
Huh. Dude, can you play as the whale?
No, you can't play as Niao. You can play as the Snekko, though, and that is probably the most fun I've had out of the 8.
Do you start with the randomizer ability?
You don't start confused. What is their inherent power? See, now you're going to have me go look it up.
Sorry.
I feel like Snekko definitely sounds like what the internet would call its pet snake.
Yeah. it is... You start, basically they have a ton of cards that are unidentified. And it's like unidentified attack or unidentified common card or unidentified draw card. And at the beginning of your run as Snekko, you pick 3 other classes, or you get 3 choices between 2 other classes. And your unidentified cards, when they are drawn, can show up as any one of the cards from those classes that meets the condition. So it might be like unidentified rare card, and then you're going to get a powerful rare card, but it's going to be from one of the 3 classes that you chose. And then all the cards that aren't unidentified kind of synergize around, you know, reducing the cost of those cards, unidentified cards, or kind of doing changing the cost like Snekko does. So I think the ability is called Muddle, where it just randomizes the cost of a card in your hand somewhere between 0 and 3. But it'll be like, you know, Muddle the highest cost card in your hand. And so, you know, you pack a couple high cost cards in there, use Muddle to get them down to playable, etc. Or, you know, if they're unidentified, you can use cards to reduce their cost even further once you've muddled them. And yeah, it's just got a really freewheeling style to it. The other thing is that, like I said, you're going down the tower, and all of the events are like similar with a twist. So, you know, you're seeing all the same people, but the text is different, because like you're a bad guy. And so when you walk into a room of cultists, they don't attack you. They're like, oh, hey, you know, and, my favorite one is there's an event where if you're playing the base game, there's a little goblin and you spin a wheel. A prize wheel. And, you know, most of the prizes are good. Like you get money or you get health. But there's a couple, that are like not great. And some that are overtly bad. Like, you know, you either get a curse card added to your deck, which is just kind of either useless or gives you a negative status effect. Or, there's one that just like you get shivved. The goblin shivs you and runs away. And so the first time I spun the wheel, in the Downfall mod going down past him, it said there was some little extra line of text about like the goblin is looking nervously backstage. And you spin the wheel and it lands on, for me, on Shiv. And you can normally only select like take 10 damage and leave. But then there's a second option under it now that says again.
What?
And like the goblin's like, no, you can't do that. That's not against the rules. And you can just click again. And he's like, look, you can't do this. And then like a big goblin comes out from behind. He's like, you causing trouble. And you have a choice to fight the goblin, the big goblin, and take the wheel.
It's mine now.
If you defeat the, it's a gremlin knob and plus a little gremlin, if for anyone that's familiar with the game, that you have to fight. And then every time you rest at a campfire, you have the wheel and you can spin the wheel and then either choose to take the result and then you're done with it, or pass on the result and spin it at the next campfire. And so it's like, you know, these boss characters just resting at a campfire, spinning this wheel that they killed a couple gremlins to get. Yeah, it's just like all the events that you would recognize from the base game have that kind of twist to it, which is absolutely delightful.
Is the heart in this at all?
It is. So it takes the place of the whale. Or Nyao. And so the heart is sending you to protect the spire. In the normal game, the heart is the ultimate enemy, and you have to collect three different key fragments on your way up to then kind of open the way to the final boss. In this one, you can still collect those fragments, but then again, at a campfire, you can break them to get some kind of benefit.
Do you
just like chuck them out so no one can ever challenge you?
Exactly. No, that's exactly what it is. Yes.
So do you fight the whale then at the end of it? Is that the equivalent of the heart in this one?
I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Because I don't think I've gotten to the point yet where I would be seeing an act four, there was one. What I will say is the way they handle bosses in this game is really cool, because it's all the characters that you play as in the base game.
Oh, okay.
Which is really neat. But the thing is, instead of normal enemies in the game, like when it's your turn, will show over their heads what they're going to do. And it'll either give an amount of attack damage, or it will say kind of vaguely like they're going to block, but not for how much, or they're going to buff or debuff, but not exactly what it is. And that's the way you fight bosses in the base game as well. When you're going up against these characters, which, you know, I've literally spent hundreds of hours playing these characters that I'm now fighting. It literally shows you the cards from their collection that they're going to play. Which is really cool, because you can kind of look and see how those cards synergize, or like, oh, this is the kind of build that they're using. And I'm not sure if it's just randomized every time or it's how late in the game you encounter them. But there are different versions of the characters, depending on when you see them, based on the different kind of archetypes that you can build out in the base game. So there's like an ironclad that is block central, or there's an ironclad that is healing central, and all this other stuff. So it's
interesting.
Just, yeah, it's really, really fun to see the, you know, the cards that you've been using for hundreds of hours used against you.
I'm curious to know like how many people put this together, or like what the behind the scenes of it is.
It had to have been a massive effort. You know, I was just playing through everything on the first difficulty level, because that's all I had access to at the time. So I don't know how well balanced or you know, breakable it is for these classes. All of their mechanics are way more complex than the base mechanics of the other characters. So it's really, really like these are things that belong in a fan-made DLC, where, you know, everyone has multiple stacks of extra pieces of information on the screen and three extra things to keep track of. And it is all very complex. And so I imagine it's a lot more breakable, just because the extra complexity lends itself to that. But I've been having a ton of fun with the Downfall mod. And I'll touch on the reason that I started playing it, which is my phone is taken up, or the Slay the Spire on my phone is spoken for at the moment.
Oh,
yeah. I am by the internet, funny enough. So I just on a whim, said, it was based on some discussions on Reddit, I was like, you know what? I will do a run and I will just post a screen of where I'm at every single day.
You mentioned this off the air last week. Yeah, we are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I will let whatever comment is the most upvoted in 24 hours is what I will do. No questions asked. And so it's been going for just over a week now and has been a ton of fun. And it's amazing to see how complicated or how much thought can go into even seemingly simple decisions early in the game. Like, you know, in the first couple of combats, your deck is not that complex yet, and the enemies are not that powerful yet. And yet people are doing like advanced math, calculating out probabilities and, well, you know, should we play this card or that card? Well, here are the scenarios where this would be better. And it's just really cool to see like the internet's mind on a run. But that means I'm literally playing one action every 24 hours.
Wow.
So yeah, in a week and a half, I have advanced to the second combat.
Okay.
Literally gone up one floor. But it's been so much fun. Has been a cool thing. So if you're the type of person who would hit up the Slay the Spire subreddit, do that and you can find it on there.
Neat.
I just call it play by comment.
You're doing this at an extreme cost by revealing your Reddit username.
Oh, this is fair. Yeah. I like to think that I am popular enough that anyone would do anything, well-intentioned or not, with knowing information about me. But yeah, it has been a good time. But you know, that's my save slot. The other two save slots are Luke and Milo's, my kids.
Oh yeah.
Wait, games still have limited save slots?
I know. I don't know why Slay the Spire would limit you that way. But so since all the slots on my phone are taken up, I was like, well, you know, I've been meaning to check out this Downfall mod. I guess I'll go do that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's worked out every way. I've enjoyed doing the kind of play by comment thing, and I've really enjoyed the Downfall mod.
See how many more devices you can get Slay the Spire on running at different speeds.
Yes. Oh man, I don't want to know how many platforms that's on. That's one of those everything games that just like you can assume.
Oh yeah.
You can find it on wherever. As it should be. It's a wonderful game.
Nice.
So that's Slay the Spire and the Slay the Spire Downfall mod. The other game I literally started playing about 2 or 3 hours ago. So I opened up the Ubisoft Connect launcher thing, and there was a big thing saying that Rabbids Party of Legends has launched. And I had heard nothing about this game before, but I watched the trailer for it, and I was like, oh, this seems like a really cute, fun party game that my kids would enjoy playing with me. So I, you know, on a whim, downloaded it, and we spent tonight before they went to bed playing Rabbids Party of Legends.
Huh.
Has anyone else heard about this game before?
No.
Because it came out of nowhere for me.
The only Rabbids game that I know of that is even close to coming out is that Mario.
Yeah.
The Mario one. Tactics one. Yeah,
that's the only one I've heard of.
Yeah.
Same. And apparently there was a Rabbids Party game a while ago that was fairly, I won't say popular, but reviewed well.
Okay.
This, I guess, was a China-only release.
Hmm.
And it's funny because the story of the game, as much as a party game can be said to have a story.
The premise.
The premise for the game, thank you, is all around the story of Journey to the West.
Okay.
And so all, you know, all the mini games are kind of very lightly themed around that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're playing the adventure mode, like there's little text in between each level that kind of tells you where in the story this mini game fits in.
Right.
Obviously from a goofy Rabbids perspective.
Of course.
Yeah. And you know, that is as unobtrusive as you would want a party game story to be.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I understand, it actually follows the Journey to the West story very closely.
All right.
Do they have the Bunny King?
I have not seen it yet, but I cannot imagine that a Bunny King would not be in here somewhere, given Rabbids. So yeah, I'll keep.
Oh,
my
I'm
eye
sorry.
Out.
I was making a Monkey King joke.
Got it. No, okay. they have multiple versions of the Monkey King though, which are all bunnies. So I guess kind of.
Kong, yeah, right? Monkey Kings for days.
Yeah. So it's standard party game fare. Every game is some version of like Simon says, or reflex testing, or timing, you know, bumper cars, King of the Hill, you know, standard party game stuff, but it's all very well executed. Mm. Some of them are free for alls where like all four of you are playing on your own. And then some of them are team based where you have 2v2 activities.
Mm.
And yeah, so for the time I put into it so far, it's been fun. And I guess this makes sense since it was a China first release. There's no online mode for the game.
Okay.
Which is a stunning omission.
Playing a party game online feels real bleak to me.
Perhaps.
I don't know. I know that party games have had that for a while, but mm-hmm. I could not imagine indulging.
Don't you do Jackbox on Twitch?
But that's kind of like, that's designed for Twitch, you know, to be participatory with a bunch of people, you know?
No, oh, I see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, sure. I'm just saying like those are collaborative, like creative jokey games.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is much more slapstick, you know, like shove the person on the couch next to you because you're trying to get an edge on them kind of games.
Yeah.
Right in line with the Rabbids ethos. So, yeah.
The Rabbids ethos. You can't say that.
Say what you will about the Rabbids, man. It's an ethos. At least it's an
ethos. So, I want to know how long it is before we have, like, a Rabbids versus Minions game.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That they fit together a little too well. A little close for comfort there.
Yeah. Rabbids versus Minions versus Servbots.
Yeah. but yeah, so I having a fun time with the couch co-op of this game.
Hmm.
And, you know, we've, like I said, two hours into it, and so I don't feel like I can say too much. Just like, it's weird. I guess I thought gone were the days where you could have a new game just kind of dropped into your lap like this. Like,
yeah,
I was not aware of this. And then I am aware, and it's finished, and I can buy it now and play.
To be fair, I'm not. I mean, was this a Nintendo game?
Yeah, on Switch, but it's on like all the platforms.
Okay, because I was going to say, I'm not sure Nintendo is aware that the internet exists.
yeah, I mean, especially with this one as an example, because there's no online mode. Yeah. But yeah, that's neither here nor there. It's a good time.
Nice.
Yeah, so those are the new things I've been playing in addition to Deep Rock Galactic.
Very cool. I might as well maximize the suspense on my new game. Ben, how about you?
All right. I got two, one new and one that I talked about last week. So the one I talked about last week, I continued playing the Outer Wilds DLC, Echoes of the Eye. I beat it, or I quote-unquote beat it. I figured out how to beat it, and I was like, just watch a YouTube video of the run. Yeah, I don't want to beat myself.
So it's a similar setup where the experience of playing the game is figuring out how to execute the perfect run.
Pretty much. Yeah. And it, you know, it is well integrated with the game. And the part that I like about it, and I'll say this as vaguely as possible, is it isn't completely separated from the base game itself. There is some like connectedness between the two things.
Okay.
So it's a nice like marriage of like the new content with the old content, and they can interact in a few meaningful ways. So nice. Basically there is like a, I think I mentioned this last week, there's like a vague combat system that they have in it that you get, it's like, or like monster encounters that you can choose to like dial down the difficulty on in the options menu. Those proved to be, I mean, they say that it was designed a certain way and like that's how the normal mode should be, but they are pretty unforgiving. And in a game where a mistake like that can cost you time and make you have to restart an entire run over, it's a little bit of a not great game design from my opinion. But I get that because they're basically like sentries or kind of like guards and that sort of thing. And so I understand like, you know, like wanting to do that as a way to have more interesting gameplay, but they should have maybe came up with some solutions around that sort of problem where it's like, if you run into them, Yeah, it's basically like an instant, or it's like a reset of the run, or like you get so much less information than you would have if you didn't have that mechanic. Mm-hmm. So maybe if there's like a neutralizing mechanic or something like that that you could figure out so that it isn't a problem all the way through the game.
Yeah.
But that said, there's a lot of cool like secrets in the game that you uncover. There's some things like I found out ahead of time, but I didn't fully understand them until it's kind of tutorialized for you. So that was interesting. They do a good job of presenting the information too and making you understand it. Basically, there's several places throughout the expansion where there's like these like theaters, and you can find these film reels scattered throughout the map. That if you can find both, you can put them in there, and you can see some sort of video that will be describing something. It could be narrative, or it could be a gameplay mechanic.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that some of these film strips have like burns in them, or like they're not all there. So you might just see a piece of a video and not necessarily have the full set of information. So that's a pretty fun mechanic as far as like slowly uncovering information and also like recontextualizing like pieces of information you see at one point, but might be completely different than what you're expecting later.
Right.
Yeah. So I would say that this is maybe, I think I talked about last week about like how big the game is. I would say it's probably about the size of like 2 to 3 planets in the regular game. So it's maybe like, I don't know, a third to half of what the base game is. So it's a sizable DLC. It's not just even though it's a single like area, it's not just like the equivalent of a single planet from the base game.
Yeah. I mean, just the closest thing that I saw compared to is like, it's an old style expansion.
What does that mean?
Oh, like an expansion pack you used to get, like expansion pack for, like Morrowind or like old PC games, right?
Okay. Yeah. Or it's just like more significant, I guess, is the...
Yeah.
Okay.
They didn't nickel and dime you.
Yeah.
For Morrowind, the expansion pack would have been the Shivering Isles, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole new story to do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically like expansions in From games, right?
Yeah.
I was pretty happy with the game. I mean, it does have a similar friction that the base game does, where as you're getting towards the end, you kind of know what you need to do, but it's a matter of doing it. And, you get a couple pieces of information and then you have to restart. And so there's, several times where you want to go, a minute or two more and finish off what you're doing, but the time runs out.
Yeah.
This one feels a little more forgiving than the base game. And I think it's just because everything's kind of a little bit closer together. Like you don't need to trek to another complete planet away to mm-hmm. do one more thing. So I think that's part of it. And then another part of it is you kind of have options all the way up to the end. So it's like if one area gets blocked off, there's other areas you can go to kind of quickly. And there's not like a single like avenue you need to go down to get the information. You can kind of get it from a couple different places.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, pretty well done DLC, well integrated with the game, cool concept, cool narrative execution, pretty solid. So mm-hmm. not a lot of complaints, worth one's time.
Nice.
And then if there's no questions with that, the other game I've been playing this week is I picked up Tunic, which I think Dennis has played.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Has anyone else played this besides Dennis?
Yeah, I've played that.
Okay, cool.
Played but not finished yet.
Yeah. I think I've put maybe, let me look it up. I put 6 hours into it. I'd say I'm probably maybe a third to halfway through is what my guess is. Basically this game's like Death's Door, and it has the guidebook, and it's Death's Door is like what I what I feel like what it's like. It's good. We already talked about it to some degree, but just as a refresher, it basically looks a lot like a Zelda game, especially the recent remaster of Link's Awakening. It's kind of Metroidvania-ish where or Zelda-ish, I guess, where it's like you get some piece of technology and that unlocks new parts of the map for you and ways to interact with it. What they do that's kind of unique in this game is and Dennis mentioned this when he talked about it, is there's just a whole bunch of secrets in the game, a whole bunch of secret paths you can kind of navigating that you might not see with the top-down camera that they have. Or not top-down, like isometric, I think it's. But there's one control. It's the control you use to typically lock on to someone in battle. But if there's no one around, it basically just slightly changes the camera angle. And that can kind of reveal like where some of the secrets are. But it has that in spades, where there's just like treasure chests littered on the map. And a lot of them are visible, but the way to get to them is not. And so so there's plenty of head-scratching opportunities for how you might get to a place like that, but there's plenty of reason to explore all the corners when you're walking down a path, even if your view is obfuscated, or I guess especially if your view is obfuscated. But yeah, and so similar to kind of the Zelda formula, there's a few like long range goals that you have. I'll spoil the first one, quote unquote. It's very Dark Souls. You need to ring two bells, so you need to ring a bell in the and ring a bell in the west. And so they tell you that straight up. And so you kind of slowly start exploring the map and figure out where to go. One thing I've been relatively happy about with this game is, even though it's a really, really large map, I don't get lost too often as far as wondering where I should go next. There's always like one or two places where I think that I could probably go, and that's actually where I need to go. I think the one exception of that is early on, there's a pattern that's not explicitly pointed out where opening doors with keys, I think the second instance of that, I didn't know that was basically a path that you need to go down, as instead of it just being like a store that might be interesting sort of thing. So I think that's the only time we got tripped up on where the main path was. But other than that, the aesthetics are pretty cute. Like the game's very, I don't know how to describe it, like bouncy or cute or like just like
it's Zelda for furries.
I wasn't referring to foxes when I was saying it was cute, but like just like the trees you chop down are very like satisfying. It's a very
it's a real
polygonal,
like rounded, like lots of like primary big broad shapes kind of feel.
Yeah, if trees could feel like candy but are still green, like that's kind of what the aesthetic is like. So I think I'm at the point right now where my gates, there's three different areas I can go to. I've gotten to the boss battles of two of them. One of them I noped out of. The second one I was going to nope out of, but they put you in a place where you can't go back, so I have to fight that one, which is fine. Because it's a boss I can beat, but it will take like maybe a half an hour, an hour to grind through and figure out the moveset and stuff and get a little bit lucky. And in that sense, that's another thing that made me feel like this game is very much like Death's Door. It has the same sort of pacing and the same sort of thing. You know, it's like you unlock a new tech, you know, you go fight monsters, it's a boss battle at the end that's kind of like a Metroid boss. You have to like grind a little bit to figure out the moveset, to master it. That's fine. I'm a little tired of that sort of loop of gameplay. I'm not putting that on this game. I'm just kind of speaking more broadly about games where if the gameplay is to like memorize a moveset so that you can beat a boss, like that's not terribly satisfying for me. I know maybe the attempt is to make it more like Dark Souls, but I don't know. Shrug.
It's in Vogue.
No. Yeah. The other thing I really like about this game is, and so I mentioned the rule book or whatever, and Dennis talked about this too when he reviewed it, where it's like you find pages scattered throughout the map, and each page is a page to the rule book, like a booklet that would be in an old school game. And that's kind of how they reveal like the controls to you. So this is kind of a similar thing as like Outer Wilds, where it's like you have all these abilities latent at the beginning, you just don't know that you have them, and so at some point the game needs to tell you that you have them, and so it's an interesting way to like slow roll it out.
Have you found anything before you were quote unquote supposed to?
I'm trying to think. I think the roll attack I think I found, and I'm not even sure if that's mentioned in the rule book. I did not find the one main one that you get, like, I don't know, you get maybe like 3 or 4 hours into the game.
Yeah, I think I know the one you're talking about.
So I haven't, I don't think, by and large, no, I haven't found anything before it's told me to do something in a certain way. But yeah, I think the it's like the Cursed Beach is the last area I was in, just so for reference, if for you guys. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. It's a cute game. I'll probably play it to completion. But in general, it's like I guess what kind of takes the punch out of it a little bit is like since I had played Death's Door before, and I can't remember which one came out first. I think Death's Door came out slightly before.
Yeah,
I'm not saying like Death's Door is the pinnacle of all gaming or anything. It just feels like I'm playing a game I've already played before, so it kind of takes a little bit of the punch out of it. I guess one thing that's different between the two is the upgrade system in this one's more interesting, I'd say, than Death's Door. Death's Door had a very like basically simple upgrade system for the combat. I think it was just two color. There's green and red, and like one upgraded your health and one upgraded your mana, I guess. Mm-hmm. This one has more complicated, where it's like you have energy like slash stamina, health, and then you have like mana. And not only do you have upgrades for those bars, but you have upgrades for like things like attack and defense and things like that. And it's not. You don't know how to upgrade until you figure it out, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so like you eventually the guidebook reveals it to you, or you might stumble upon it yourself. But that does make it more interesting. But that said, I don't feel like it's something where I'm rewarded. If I explore every quarter, it feels like I have to do that. And it feels like I'm punished if I don't do that.
Right.
Almost. Because, for example, they tell you in the guidebook one of the earliest bosses you fight, it says in the guidebook, like, hey, you should be at this level before you fight this boss, which is nice that they do that. But at the same time, like, I felt like I had explored every corner and I was just at that level. I wasn't beyond it. So, So anyway, it's a cute game. That said, I think it's a $30 price tag on it. I think this game's probably more in, like, the 15 to 20 ballpark for me, but... Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion, so I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt.
Sales are frequent.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Tunic. Any questions on Tunic?
No.
Word. Cool.
Nice. So that was you. Outer Wilds, Echoes of the Eye, and Tunic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've got just
drum roll, please.
if anybody has been paying attention on Twitter or on Twitch, where I've been streaming, I have played Scorn.
Yeah.
Scorn owns. I love this game so much. Oh my gosh. This is a new survival horror game. It's by a Serbian studio. The primary, I think, kind of like the signature part of it is the visuals. The fact that it is taking very heavily from the artwork of H.R. Giger and Zdzislaw Beksinski, two artists, who are been in vogue for a long time, really influential sci-fi fantasy artists kind of deals. I love Zdzislaw Beksinski. If you look up a screenshot of this, you will see kind of what that means. This is a horrific looking game, and pretty much every single frame, it could be just a marquee screenshot. For what's going on here. This is
muscles and intestines forced together with machines.
Yes. Really like biomechanical, like disturbingly, some like sexual designs, just a fusion of bone and flesh and metal and mechanism. Yeah, it's good shit. and there have been games that have, gone in on this kind of style, like, back in the 90s, there were a couple of adventure games called Darkseid and Darkseid 2 that took like the H.R. Giger actually used his artwork, licensed his artwork to make some stuff. Giger was the guy who designed a bunch of stuff for the Alien series, designed the Xenomorph. So that's where people might know this from. This is a difficult game to talk about because there really is no story to it. and I see that like people kept on popping in on the stream and like, oh yeah, so what's going on? Like, what's the story here? And it's like, there's none.
Gross ass hallway.
you wake up in this world surrounded by horrifying mechanisms that are both creating and destroying life, and you must navigate them. Something terrible has happened, and you are trying to find your way clear of this situation for reasons that maybe for something above and beyond survival, but you are just...
You're not describing life right now, right?
Right. Right.
Well, yeah. You're not just describing
life. Yeah, all right.
But this is a game, you know, like, it is not a talky game insofar as that, like, no character ever speaks an English word to you. Like, everything is done non-textually, non-verbally. It communicates to you in symbols. You are trying to discern the functions of these machines and trying to navigate these environments. People were initially put off. This is weird. I think this is a game that was not served by its expectations. I found it kind of bizarre that people came in saying, but wait, so where's the shooting? Like, why? Like, there should be
the trailers. Shooting. The trailers are all shooting all the time.
Are they? Really?
Yes.
No.
I have
the first like concept art trailer. There was no guns at all. There's no character at all. It was just
why. Well, so this game is on Game Pass, which is where I'm guessing everyone commenting is coming right. from. And I've seen the trailer for it 100 times. I actually booted it up and played like a half hour of it, not enough to talk about.
Okay.
But watching the trailer, it's like, yeah, shooting nonstop.
That was a bad move on their part.
That was, yeah, a terrible move on their part. Because
this
it could
is,
not be more different.
This is more like Myst. This is survival horror Myst, which is why I am like crazy into it with all of its caveats. And there is a real kind of blowback on social media about it, and also just kind of in the reviews. I think just to like, I kind of became aware of this back when it was doing its initial Kickstarter run. Like, it had a failed Kickstarter run, like back in like 2014. And I was like, hell yeah, this is a game I'm going to want to pay attention to. And then I didn't look at anything until I like fired it up. So I didn't come in with any expectation that there would be combat at all. I was surprised that there was combat. Is the combat good? Not really. No. If you're trying to engage with it like a shooter, you have very limited ammo and very limited ability to, you know, there's no like dodge or like cover system or anything. But, you know, I internalized it and think about it like it is a survival horror game, you know, where every shot is going to matter. And it is more about getting past enemies or, you know, getting in, like tricking enemies into attacking scenery so I can get around to get an attack in, you know.
Do they put you in many situations where you need to fight a thing?
I mean, it never like locks you in a room with something that you have to kill.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you go into close up mode on a puzzle panel, like interacting with something, like the world around you freezes. Good.
It doesn't overtly tell you that the world around you freezes. Like, no. There's a lot of the horror of the early game is you need to like lock yourself into this thing, not knowing if something is about to grab you.
Yeah. or at least like enemies, enemies that are free roaming in the area cannot attack you. That is not saying that a bad thing will not happen to you while you are interacting with something.
Yes.
Like very early on, this big parasite gets a hold of you. It becomes like a big lizard thing that like hops onto your back and becomes like a vampiric backpack. And its little hands will like reach into your stomach and like do damage to you as it draws power and like grows and like that. But like that also, it also becomes your weapon. Like this thing is attached to you and you end up using it to power your like little, close up tool that basically is just the xenomorph claw, like mouth kind of deal.
Sounds like a blood for blood situation.
Kind of blood for blood. Yeah.
I went back and I checked. So the trailer is 1:16 and 25 seconds in you get guns. And then the next, you know, 30 seconds, it just looks like a Call of Duty trailer.
That is weird.
Super weird.
I don't know why they would, they would advertise this game like that. I'll leave my point that, you know, at that point, it becomes a question of, do you hold the game's marketing against it? Do you hold your expectations against it? Or do you meet it on its own terms and, just kind of take it for what it is, as opposed to what it kind of presented itself to be? I don't know what the answer for that is, but
in this case, take it for the rad, twisted game that it is, because it's pretty cool.
What were you going to say, Dave?
I was going to say, is there the option to simply like embrace the whatever and become some sort of bio cyborg monster?
I have to imagine that's where it's going. I haven't beaten this game yet. I've streamed 4 hours and I feel like I'm about probably halfway through. But yeah, it is slowly taking over. I imagine eventually I'll be more Parasite than whatever I began as.
So
nice.
Going back to the conversation of like expectations from the trailers, one thing I was mildly disappointed about watching this game was I was expecting more from the graphics of the game from the initial like teaser trailer. I think I put it in the backstage, but it's the trailer where it's just like high definition, like gore, like very, I don't know, morbid scenes and creepy scenes or whatever. But everything was, since it's like a trailer and all pre-rendered or whatever, everything looks like very high def and very nice. So yeah. I'm curious like what this would look like on like the highest of the high-end machines versus like the regular machine.
Yeah.
If it has like a high ceiling and it like looks like what I would want it to look like, or if that's just not the case.
Yeah, so that trailer is specifically showing it on an Xbox Series X. Like my computer that I am streaming it on is, you know, I built it I think like 3 or 4 years ago, which isn't incredibly long ago, but it's not going at 4K. Also, like for bandwidth purposes, because my internet is little more than two cups and a string between it. Between my house and the Spectrum office, I am capturing it at 720, which is also putting it out at low resolution. I'm playing it at 1080, and I think that it looks amazing. But also, I have not seen this trailer to set the expectation for how like detailed it is. Like I was playing it and just constantly admiring just the materials work and how nothing felt like it was repeated. Everything felt like really, really like not handcrafted, but like it had grown organically, which is a weird thing, you know?
Mm. It's very unnerving when it is an industrial complex.
Yes.
Yeah. And I should clarify, it's like a lot of like the set piece things, like where it's like the plugs that look like an anus or a dong or something like that. Those look cool, but like, it's like, there's some hallways where it's like, they're kind of boxy and there's like no, I would expect more like, I don't know, like dripping effects or moisture or something, or like some sort of effect besides just like kind of like a box hallway with the skin of like this like art style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I would probably have to fire it up on my Xbox Series X. It's a matter of like, it's easier to stream from my computer.
And I'm not trying to, this isn't like a knock against you or whatever, because how most people are playing it anyway. So
So like the lack of a story is also bumming some people out, but like I would so much rather have just this Myst like experience. I mean, even more worse than Myst, because Myst had like FMVs and you were reading journals and stuff like that, but just like being put into the world and like trying to discern what any of these machines are and having the answer, you know, either be more banal or more horrifying than you expected it to be. And also, like, there's ecology. Like, this is kind of entirely a game about, you know, ecology of either what the intended purpose of this place is, or, you know, like, in the first third or so of the game, you end up going deeper into this facility that is obviously, like, parasitized or infected with something. Mm-hmm. Things are rotten. It's being kind of ripped apart by something that is taking the place of what once was there, you know? Yeah. And like that kind of thing, I don't know, I get a real charge out of trying to figure that out just by observing and not by having it explained to me.
Yeah, I think there are games that don't need story in the same way that like a really evocative painting doesn't need a story,
right,
as you would traditionally think of it. And I found, you know, that trying to figure out what the hell is going on is one thing. Like just trying to figure out what the hell to do next can lead to just some really meditative, creepy, still runs of the game, or runs within the game. And I was really struck. The point that I felt like it was making, or that I came away with, was like, you know, how quickly you wake up in this place with no context, no story. And you're just trying to figure out the world around you. And you're like, well, this all vaguely looks like it's meant to hurt someone, so I will I guess I'll just start torturing this being.
that is very much the thing you do in the prologue to the game.
Yeah, see where that gets me. And it's just like that is, I mean, you know, they've run those social experiments and everything, just about how quickly humans degenerate into savaging each other when that is seen as socially acceptable. And so in this world, just I mean, you the player are coming in knowing it's a horror game and all that, but within the world, just the hint of this, like, the way things work here is abominations torture abominations, how quickly you fall into line with that was really striking to me.
Yeah, because that was the structure that was put up around you, that is the system, and even in its decay, you know, it's only going to get more brutal as you try to find some way clear of it, as something literally, you know, does to you what you are doing to this world itself. Like, it kind of, like, this game doesn't need a narrative because the story is what you do within it. And, like, the backstory is just the state things that are, the state that things are in. You know, like,
Anything resembling plot that you tried to slap on top of that would just detract from it. So I'm very happy with how they've balanced story versus atmosphere so far.
It just gives it gives it space. I love it.
I mean, it kind of thrives on the mystery of it too, right? So a narrative would kind of undermine that.
Yeah. No. I mean, like, I've seen people's, you know, reactions to and rejections of it. You know, either on combat basis or checkpoints or whatever, but, like, you know, as happens so often, I can just kind of recognize, oh yeah, this is a mess, but it's my mess. This, you know, like, okay, survival horror mist that cribs from these great artists that I really enjoy. Fuck yeah, man. Somebody made it for me, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scorn. It's good. I can't wait to finish it. It killed me to stop because I, like, oh, well, I guess I'll be back next week.
So you're going to finish it on stream then?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. No. Any other questions about Scorn?
No. Sounds very cool.
Yeah. It's on Game Pass. Try it. You'll know pretty quick if it's for you or not. Nice. Well, that's a segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about grinding, which is a fact of life in many games. So, what games do the best job of keeping the grind interesting rather than tedious?
Yeah. And we'll get started here with Callum, who says, Horizon Forbidden West was a big step forward on this. It removed the bullshit loot crates, and instead, you were carefully hunting machines and removing off specific parts that you wanted. The numbers were still a bit high for my liking, though. Yeah, getting rid of those loot crates is a huge deal. I have not played that game, but just hearing that makes me, like, kind of want to give it a shot.
Yeah,
I've not played this, but that just sounds horrifying to me. That I'm just imagining, like, you being like, oh, well, I only need a leg, and then this robot's just, like, limping off with the parts you've ripped off.
So Zero Dawn had loot crates. I don't think you could ever just straight up buy them, but several drops would just be a loot crate that you could open at some point.
Oh, you could totally buy them.
Oh, you could?
Yeah.
I was so inundated with them. It felt more like an apology for the terrible inventory caps than anything else. But yeah, okay. If you could buy them, that's absolute bullshit, and I'm glad it's gone.
Yeah.
Were these, like, cosmetics or weapons?
It wasn't real money loot crates. It was, like, materials. Like, everything that you could pick up in the game was materials that were, like, one step or another, you know, toward making into something useful, either a weapon or a different kind of ammo.
Yeah, you could go, you know, try to hunt people for parts, or I guess buy loot crates. I want to know who did that, though. That's crazy.
It's like, a bad decision.
You bought this game to play the game. Why would you just throw money at it?
Well, no. So it wasn't real money loot crates. It was, like, you bought it with in-game currency at shops.
God, I mistook that. I thought you were saying it was something that you could, like, buy packs of loot crates from the store. Yeah, I mean, they functioned in game as loot crates. Mm-hmm. It felt to me like there was some kind of thought of, like, well, maybe we could sell them at some point. But yeah, they never came to that.
Yeah, I'm glad it didn't come to that. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 4 do a good job with this, I think. So much stuff to do that you could grind in numerous ways to mix things up. Most of the loot locations were interesting with backstory and the terminals, if you cared to look. Witty comments from companions. Okay, mostly witty. And good music to help entertain you.
Yeah. Also, the fact that most things that you do get you experience is a big part of that in the three Fallout games. Yeah. David, what does Austin say?
Austin said, since Fallout 4 was already said, any game where the grinding affects the world is great. It's nice to see the world around you fully change because of the hours you put in.
Usually by depopulating whole whole species of animals.
So you look at the American way, Factorio, and be like,
I mean, doing that eventually depopulates you. So, oh, Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
He says, I just finished the Metroidvania Sundered. Best part of the game is that whenever you die, you go back to the main hub and level up. You never lose experience, and it's always a significant upgrade that will make a difference for the next run. I didn't have to grind for the whole game until I got to the very last boss, and grinding took only about an hour to get to max level. That's what I call a well-balanced game.
Nice. I know, David, you like the game Sundered, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm of the position that Sundered is criminally underappreciated.
Yeah. I've always intended to do it, but I kind of figured we would do it for a Bonfireside Chat at some point. So it's always earmarked for future content.
Yeah, that's one of those that is perpetually installed on my machine because I've got to run halfway through and I keep on telling myself, like, yeah, I might just jump in
at some point. Oh, it's been too long. You're going to forget. You're going to forget what all the stuff does.
That's the curse of Metroidvanias.
No, it's procedurally generated. Oh, you already forgot.
Eli says, as someone who I think is more lenient toward grinding than others, I have to say the answer is never. If you, the player, are calling it grinding, it is not good. I don't really mind running the top of Menzies' Nightmare for Blood Echoes, but I don't think there's a good ideal for grind.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, that's true. If you have to call it grinding, then you kind of already have lost.
Which I guess, kind of going back to Jeremy's answer, kind of that comes from the same place of the best amount of grinding is where you don't have to do it.
Yeah. And Ben, what does David say?
David says the Suikoden games, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Suikoden?
Okay. Have 108 characters, with usually about 70 of them available for combat. You would think grinding up all those levels would take forever, but you simply bring a level 7 character to a level 20 area, keep them alive for 3 to 5 battles, and they're now level 20. Keeping everyone equipped and managing their inventory is a whole different beast, and there's always gambling minigames for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always the thing that's infuriated me the most about Pokemon, is you get this gigantic roster of creatures that you need to level up 6 at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you know, if you don't use it in combat, it's not going to get as significantly leveled. So, yeah, it's the Suikoden approach sounds infinitely better than that.
Yeah.
They just need to add a mechanic where you can grind up the Pokemon for dust and then use that for your other Pokemon.
I mean, that's how Pokemon Go works.
It's not dust, it's candy.
Oh, yeah. You're cooking them Pokemon.
I'm going to... I pretty much am of the mind, if you call it grinding, then it's by definition not great. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't make me stop playing a game, but... It is its own kind of activity for which I have, you know, varying appetites. If I am going to grind a game that we replayed recently for Watch Out for Fireballs, Final Fantasy XII does it very well, which is you set up the game to play automatically and you speed it up to 4X. And instead of being a, you know, like semi-turn-based, semi-real-time RPG, it becomes a little bit of a management game where you advance time quickly to let stuff go, and you check your meters and you check and see how people are performing and see how attacks are landing, and then go in and make adjustments to the automatic play in order to make it in order to make the meters balance out.
Is this a mod or is this built into the game?
It is in the re-releases. So the version that you can buy today, the Zodiac Age version, it lets you either do a fast forward, like right out of the box, do a fast forward 2x or 4x. The Gambit system, the programmatic battles are kind of a key feature of the game. Yeah. So yeah, then like that to me is a good way to handle like the grind, is to turn it into a different kind of game.
Very cool.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Yeah. So I think the one counterexample I had for the grinding, opinion that a lot of people have, I'm thinking like factory games are ones where it is a grind to build up a factory, for sure. But that is also the gameplay of the game. And it's weird that it's like, have you guys heard the expression type 2 fun?
Where
you go like hiking and it sucks at the time, but at the end of the day, you're like, wow, I'm really glad I did that. And so I feel like factory games are kind of like type 2 fun games where it's like, yeah, it's not fun like hooking up like conveyor belts or something, but then at the end of it, you got this really cool like system and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, my answer for this question is Dyson Sphere Project, because like some great movies like Parasite or Triangle of Sadness, where they completely shift gears like partially way through the movie, and it's like something completely different. The gameplay in that game is like that as well, where it's like maybe a third of the way through the game, you unlock a new ability and you're like, wow, this is completely different than anything I did before. I'm operating at a higher level now. And then the same thing happens 2/3 of the way through the game. So
nice.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
I think I'm going to have to go with Warframe.
Okay.
It's got...
Shocker!
Yeah. It's got a ton of grinding. To a significant degree, the game is grinding. But I think the thing is, it turns out that when grinding takes the form of flipping out like a ninja and just doing badass stuff all the time, it becomes a lot more fun. It's, kind of applied World of Power type of thing.
The similar principle probably holds true for Destiny insofar as like, yeah, you're grinding, but you're also doing bungee shooting to have that
exactly.
happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, there's also, I think one of the things that Warframe has even over Destiny is it tends not to worry so much about balance. The way they address balance is just the game can get infinitely more difficult. So because of that, there's absolutely no effort to stop you from stacking enough range modifiers on your shotgun that it has the range of a sniper rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And so you also reach the point where it becomes like, oh, I can just try to figure out what's the most crazy, over-the-top, broken way to try to grind.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of fun. It also helps that it tends to sort of settle down into a thing where you don't necessarily... You can't do everything all the time without grinding, but you can pretty much always do something at any given time.
Okay.
Without grinding. So there's, always some weapon you've unlocked recently or character or something like that. So it's never just like, oh, I have to play, 30 hours before I unlock the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Nice.
Play Warframe.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so for me, the answer would be Hades. And I think what that game does better than anyone else is that when you hit the point of grinding through runs, it doesn't completely shut off the story faucet. And, you know, it definitely slows down, but that so much care is given to those characters and you're so invested at that point that, you know, maybe once every three or four runs, you're getting like a really interesting new bit of dialogue. But just the promise that you might makes it so much more, you know, exciting and interesting to go into these runs. Because, you know, not only do you get it at the hub between runs, but every time you go into a character's area, you know, there's a chance that maybe I'll hear something new from them or get some new commentary. And there's, you know, there's significant story developments that keep on happening as you are getting deeper and deeper into the game. So, you know, mechanically, there's definitely like a, hey, can you beat this game on, I think it's heat, 32 heat level, which is like, you know, all these different difficulty modifiers cranked up to max. But in terms of the story of the game, it feels like you're still in the middle of it, even as it draws out into grinding.
Nice. Well, thank you everybody for responding. If you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you for posting this one, Dennis.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games, sometimes that are exciting to us. I've got one that is mostly a gray cloud with a little bit of a silver lining. The gray cloud is, hey, so I'm going to do a rare thing and pull out our discussion here. And I'm going to outline why and share kind of the broad consensus that we arrived at kind of instead. So the story that I had was about the Bayonetta 3 voiceover controversy. Bayonetta's original voice actor, Helena Taylor, made some claims about how little she was offered in payment by Platinum Games before the role was recast with Jennifer Hale, causing some people to be, you know, pretty upset. We had our discussion this previous Tuesday when we recorded before some other claims came to light, calling into question the veracity of Helena Taylor's claims. Now, this isn't to say that Platinum's case is immediately more believable or that other stuff is coming out. It's just we had a discussion with old information. It's only gotten more out of date as the week has progressed. So we had gone back and forth with that old info, and I think keeping it here would have just muddied things and potentially prolonged some misconceptions about the story that is progressing pretty rapidly. The takeaway, to kind of go along with the setup there, is that the gray cloud is the controversy over the recasting. The silver lining is that this has surfaced more discussion and stories about how video game voice talent is treated and paid. It's not very well in either case. And we strongly support efforts for voice actors to organize and push for things like residuals, which honestly should be more common across the board in game development. So yeah, we're going to cut back to the regularly scheduled programming here, just letting you know why there's kind of a hole. Let's move to something that won't be as hairy. Hey, Ben, what's going on with Silent Hill?
This is something we can't talk about because we don't know what's going to happen.
So yeah, isn't this Konami announced their new pachinko machine?
Konami's back, baby. Slots are dead.
So just before you go into this, we're talking about something that is happening tomorrow as of when we're recording, and it happened 2 days ago as of when you're listening to this.
Yeah, we should each make a very concrete prediction.
My prediction is this is a new slot machine of pachinko.
I feel like this is elevating the format of a thing is happening and hear what it is, where a thing will happen. It might be this.
Yeah, maybe. Go ahead and tell us what's going on.
They're just having a press event tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern time, 2 p.m. Pacific, where they're announcing something. And then there's a lot of speculation on what that might be. There's an article in Polygon where they say all the different like rumors and different projects over the past few years of what it could be as well. Yeah. So, I mean, some of the speculation says it might be a Silent Hill 2 remake that the Layers of Fear studio is going to do. I don't know. Could be a new mainline game because of the concept art that was leaked before that they had takedown notice of.
We talked about that. Yeah. Just the image of the post-it note creature that Masahiro Ito designed.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we'll see what exactly it is tomorrow.
What has me thinking it is definitely a Silent Hill 2 remake, or at least leaning toward that. I don't know about definitely. You say, absolutely, it's going to be this, and that is a way to be made a fool of. The fact that the announcement tweet is, in your restless dreams, do you see that town? The fact that pretty much all they were able to do post-2004 with the Silent Hill series was just attempt to recapture Silent Hill 2 by trying to do the same thing. Even if it is not specifically a Silent Hill 2 remake, I am just a little bit skeptical that they're going to be able to escape the footprint of that, because that is probably what a sizable portion of the audience thinks that they want.
I mean, that would be appropriately cash grabby.
My prediction,
there have been good remakes.
Yeah. My prediction is the town is not Silent Hill. It's Prairie Home Companion game that they're going to make instead.
Oh, weird. Wobbegon?
Like a hard left turn.
Yeah, straight toward Wobbegon, where the women are tall. Men are, like, the children are taller. I don't know. I never listened to that show.
where the women are dead, the men are responsible, and the children are all trying to kill you.
Yep. So I really hope that it's not a Bloober Team thing. I do not trust them with that subject matter at all. The announcement out of left field that I who knows how that will turn out is the fact that Christoph Gans, the director of the 2006 Silent Hill movie, is clamoring to make another one.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. No, he's talked about wanting to do it for a while. Said he's working on a script for it.
So was a second one?
A third one.
No, but I'm saying there was a second one.
It's fucking terrible. Yeah.
Wait, I thought there were three altogether too, because I thought the third one was a 3D one.
That is the second one, Silent Hill 3D Revelations.
Oh God.
Yeah.
the first one I remember being pretty good.
Yes. Yeah.
There's stuff to recommend it. Yeah. It's just, yeah. So who knows? People listening to this are laughing at our suppositions.
Yeah.
We will see. I may be skeptical. That does not mean I am wishing for it to fail. I love Silent Hill games with all my heart. They are some of the most dear video games to me. Foundational. I would love to be proven wrong. It's just, you know, I've been burned. We've been burned, you know. It's hard to get excited until the game is in your hands.
Especially the cop in the movie was very burned.
Oh no. Yeah. let's see. Third one here. Hey, David, what are scientists doing with them brain cells?
So scientists have taught brain cells how to play Pong.
Isn't
which that you know, how seems we play a little Pong. Weird because I taught my brain cells how to play Pong as a very small child.
Yeah.
right.
But no, they have taken apparently 800,000 human and rat mouse cells and connect them to something called Brain Dish, which apparently, you know, gives them electric stimulus when the ball hits the paddle, and this was enough for the cell, and you know, then detects electric stimulus to control the paddle,
mm-hmm.
and that was enough for the brain cells to relatively quickly learn to play Pong. So apparently, they played a total of 486 games,
mm-hmm.
and they very quickly, you know, increase this, the number of times, you know, the ball would go back and forth, you know, without a point being scored.
Mm-hmm.
And the human cells did better than the mouse cells.
Hell yeah.
They never actually fought each other. they just, you know, it was mouse versus mouse, human versus human.
Okay.
Yeah, and so yeah, I think the I saw someone comment on this, which I think makes a lot of sense. Probably the most interesting thing here is that there wasn't actually any reward mechanism.
That's what I was going to ask, like, if there was like a dopamine, you know, something to do with the receptors, it was literally just, hey, stimulus happens when this happens, so we want to make that happen more.
Yeah, exactly. So this suggests like a sort of, you know, self-organizing, I don't know, you know, bias towards
activity,
interacting with the environment.
That makes me feel infinitely worse about this.
We're back to World of Power.
God, my skin was crawling before I had that fact. This needs to stop. This is not cool.
They need to really make sure that they sterilize all of that equipment, because if they leave some kind of like halfway moldy brain dish or whatever, and it starts growing.
Oh fuck.
Yeah, this does, they have argued, technically make these brains sentient. So that raises,
I was gonna say, there's no reward. This is just the only way this poor consciousness can interact with the world, and they are grasping for something.
Huh.
Like I'm being hyperbolic, but like, yeah. this is just ooky to me.
Well,
like,
you will be happy to know that they have stated their next experiment is seeing the results of getting the brains drunk or giving them medicine.
Beer pong.
Beer pong. Yep.
So yeah,
I saw elsewhere someone, they were like, don't worry, we've been consulting with a bioethicist. It's like that's just someone who got a master's degree to help you rationalize whatever you want to do. Fuck this. This is like personal Uki level is 9,000.
They're saying that they're hoping to learn how to cure conditions such as epilepsy and dementia. Yeah,
I will take that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
It'd be nice. It'd be a better result than Pong.
Pong is a step on the way to curing dementia.
I guess.
Ugh. Yeah. You're only focused on the existential horror. Come on.
Yeah, can we get to the body horror for what this is actually going to look like?
Yeah, I was going to say, this is coming from people that were super into Scorn. Yeah. I'm just saying.
This is true.
I am like, this is not triggering my like my revulsion. It's more like, oh, that's neat. It is interesting that they are acting without, I don't know. Yeah, just acting without reward. That is weird.
So yeah. If I get to a Pong minigame in Scorn, I am out.
just imagine though, like all of the technologies we could make if we could just grow brains and make them do stuff for us. Well, I mean, shit, I guess we kind of did that already.
Yeah, but I mean, it's real simple, but we're on our way. Yeah.
Don't like us. Don't like us at all. Can I do my fluff story?
Yes, you can do a fluff story. hey, Dennis, what's happening in the world of Minecraft?
Yeah,
what's that Notch up to these days?
Oh God! Yeah, it has nothing to do with Minecraft anymore. I said I wanted to decrease the Uki level, please. So here's your eye bleach equivalent for that story. Yeah, so I could not care less about Minecraft proper, but damn it, these spinoffs they keep on doing are kind of awesome.
You're crazy all about the Minecraft Dungeons.
Minecraft Dungeons was/is great. Like, it's excellent. It got a free-to-play battle pass nonsense stapled onto it, but we'll overlook that. And now with the, I guess they just did a big Minecraft event and announced that a game called Minecraft Legends is coming in spring 2023. It is a Minecraft RTS game. And, you know, I haven't watched
just
the whole
what
video.
This world needed, you know, more war.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess I didn't watch the full like, cause apparently it's like, how long is this? Yeah. They did a 30-minute like showcase of it, talking in depth with developers and everything. So I haven't gotten all that yet, but the premise seems to be that you're still playing Minecraft, but it's now at scale. So your character is kind of like riding a horse, a leader character. And instead of, you know, going and chopping down a bunch of trees, if you want wood, you ride up to an area of forest and you summon helpers that will then chop wood for you and you get those resources.
Nice.
And in the same way, you're not building a bridge block by block. You're kind of saying, I want a bridge here.
Ordering a prefab. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is combat in the game, and at least in what they showed, you're not directly interacting with it. So it's not a brutal legend or any of the other RTSs like that style.
Where sacrifice, like, yeah.
Yeah, where your avatar is like a super powerful unit. Instead, you are kind of standing back and directing your units, having them build relevant pieces of equipment as you go. So I think they showed off building a bunch of arrow turrets mid-battle. Mm-hmm. Or rather ordering a bunch of those built. So yeah. I'm very intrigued. RTS is a fun genre that I have yet to find a game that is light enough while scratching the RTS itch well enough, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah.
And Minecraft Dungeons did that for the ARPG genre. So I'm hoping they can do that for RTS as well.
Mm. This just makes me want a Minecraft city builder management Ooh. Kind of thing.
Oh yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess we'll find out if Dungeons was lightning in a bottle or if they can mine this for all it's worth. color me intrigued.
Yeah, no, I'm interested. It is even just seeing the screenshot with all those different resources. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go and exploit some zones.
Yep.
In a video game. Yes. Game.
yeah. In Minecraft. Yeah. So
it's actually instead of, because you build everything in Minecraft, you instead of summoning units, you summon like individual neuron pieces of the units and you assemble just enough to get it to respond to stimulus and then train it. Oh God, it's Pong again.
Yep. Oh no, it all reverts to Pong.
I mean, with enough was it redstone circuits or whatever?
Maybe.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They have literally built Minecraft in Minecraft using redstone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Cause people Jesus. Are maniacs. Nice. Well, that was a good palate cleanser. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. It sounds like Dennis is dying, so we better do this quick.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, Dennis goes first.
I definitely died on the inside.
Oh, no. Don't worry. We just plug him into the brain bat.
I'm going to take a shower after this podcast.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 433. It was a good time. We're going to make this outro pretty quick for you. You know what to do to support the podcast: ratings, reviews, telling your friends, Patreon, Facebook. All of those are good things, as is coming back next week. Is there anything I'm forgetting, comma, or anything you want to plug, Dennis? Period, question mark.
No, exclamation point.
Okay. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch me stream the remainder of Scorn this weekend on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. I'll be playing more Scorn, but you can't watch.
I'm David Meismith. I'm going to be plugging my brain into the mouse cell matrix. I don't know. There's something with this.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. All right, who's got titles? Let's
see, I got three.
Okay.
I've got Max Maxing. I've got Unaccompanied Minor. MINER, of course. Okay. And then finally, Rabbids Ethos.
Can I stylize that as the Rabbids Ethos?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's how I styled it, and that was the only one I had.
Okay. Ben, you got anything?
I have two. I have unaccompanied minor as well, but if that's somebody else's joke, then maybe not that.
Yeah.
And then the other one I have is I'm good at hypocrisy.
I like the rabid ethos.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go because I'm going to go to bed so I can be properly spiritually centered for the Silent Hill thing. God.
Can those brain cells sleep? Are they just permanently conscious?
I mean, I think that they would wake up possibly with stimulus unless they're stimulating themselves.
Oh, no.
They almost certainly would. You have got the, was it active mode network?
I don't know
what that is.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know what that is. I need to stop the recording. It has decided